Welcome to the CCA edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the cholangiocarcinoma community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Dr. Shahid Khan of Imperial College London in the United Kingdom. Dr. Khan recently addressed the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation's annual 2022 conference on the subject of ICD coding for the disease. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Larry.
Let's talk about cholangiocarcinoma, about the disease, and about your background and expertise in it. How did you get interested in this particular disease?
When I was training to become a specialist. So when I was a resident, I think we call it in the US, before you reach attending level, I wanted to do some research. One of my supervisors at the time was an academic, and he said he wanted to do a project on cholangiocarcinoma, which is a type of liver cancer, a rare type of liver cancer. And I was quite keen to do a PhD. I have to admit, at the time, I didn't really care what it was in, so long as there was funding that came with it. But I always had an interest in cancer as a disease. And of course, I knew I wanted to be a liver specialist. So, you know, everything ticked and it was the right time. And so I got involved in this research, initially looking at the epidemiology. So that's looking at the number of cases and mapping them over time. And what we found was in the UK, cholangiocarcinoma was increasing. This had not been reported before. When we looked further afield in Europe and the US and other countries, looking at the WHO database, we found the same thing, that cholangiocarcinoma was steadily increasing year on year out between the 1970s, 80s and 90s. This was no one had reported that before. So that got me interested in the disease and the cancer. And as my training progressed and I became attending level, and then I've always maintained an interest in the research side of this disease.
Is that because of increased awareness of the disease or because of environmental factors that might be driving up the number of cases?
That's an excellent question. We always think it might be due to increasing awareness, and that's a possibility. However, when you look at the data, not all cholangiocarcinoma are increasing. Only one particular subtype is increasing. So if it was awareness just of the disease overall, that shouldn't happen. And studies have looked at the possibility of, is it that we're just getting better at diagnosing it? And if that was the case, we should be picking up the cancer earlier, more quickly, and that should be leading to improved survival, earlier stage disease at diagnosis, if it's that we're just more aware and we're better at diagnosing it. But that has not happened. We haven't massively improved survival times. We are not picking them up at earlier stages. And when you look at the rise, it's a very gradual sort of biological rise. It's not in sort of jump starts. So we think that, yeah, there might be some increased awareness and better diagnostics, but I don't think that explains it all.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Obviously, there are some great disparities in the prevalence of this particular disease from one country to the next. And we understand that in Southeast Asia, for example, in Thailand, in certain areas of Thailand, its prevalence is up to 65 cases per 100,000, while in most of Europe and the United States, it may be 1 to 2 cases, if I'm not mistaken, per 100,000. Why is that?
So that is presumably because of what some people call the exposome, what we're exposed to, i.e. environmental factors. So I think we are really understanding now that much of disease, I'm not just talking about cholangiocarcinoma or cancer, I'm talking about, you know, a bunch of things, everything from diabetes to hypertension to irritable bowel syndrome. Most disease probably occurs due to a combination of one's genetic makeup, not necessarily directly inherited, but your combination of genes, which is a hugely complex thing, plus your exposure to particular risk factors. Now, where in the world cholangiocarcinoma is highest, so northeast Thailand, where the new cases are, you know, almost 100 times, 50 to 100 times greater than most Western countries, it's very much linked to liver flukes. So these parasites that are ingested by the local customer feeding raw fish. And these flukes embed themselves in the liver, they cause chronic damage and irritation, and anything that causes chronic damage and irritation to an organ is a breeding ground for a change of the cells to cancer cells. And so that is deemed to be very much a driving force there. And most of the known risk factors for cholangiocarcinoma do exactly that. They cause chronic damage to the bile ducts, the tubes in the liver that carry bile, where these cancers arise. So in the Western world, the commonest known risk factor is a condition called PSC, primary sclerosing cholangitis, which is an autoimmune condition of the liver. We don't know what causes PSC. But in PSC, you get inflammation within the bile ducts over time that causes chronic damage to the bile ducts, and that is a big risk factor for cholangiocarcinoma. So there are risk factors, and the risk factors could be genetic, they could be other diseases, they could be known environmental things like, you know, liver flukes, toxins, certain toxins, for example. There was a contrast agent called Thorotrast, which was used for many decades after the Second World War until around the 1970s, which was a general contrast used in lots of radiology, lots of imaging. And then it was found that many people got liver cancer from it because it caused mutations in the liver cells. And then it was, you know, stopped being used.
So that brings me to my next question, and which is the subject of your lecture recently on the importance of correct medical coding for this disease. Let's talk about that. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with the ICD-10 system. Can you explain that, please?
Sure. So the first thing to say is that the cholangiocarcinoma, there are three subtypes. Intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, which arises within the sort of the meat of the liver itself. And then there's perihilar cholangiocarcinoma, which arises at the exit of the bile ducts as the bile ducts are leaving the liver. And then there's extrahepatic, which is cholangiocarcinoma, which arises in the bile ducts outside the liver. The bile ducts form one big tube that goes into the intestine to drain the bile into the intestine. So there are three distinct anatomical sites of cholangiocarcinoma: in the liver, perihilar at the exit of the liver, and distal, which means outside the liver. Now, the relevance of these are that these three, they're all cholangiocarcinoma, but they present differently. They're clinical features are different. How one makes a diagnosis might be different. And the treatment is potentially different. The type of surgery might be different. Whether it can be stented or not to relieve obstruction, that may be different. So, and the other thing that we're realizing is that these three subtypes have distinct epidemiological trends. They have distinct mutations. So the pathobiology, the sort of mutations that lead to them, seem to be different between these three subtypes. So it is important to know these three subtypes. Now, of these three subtypes, the commonest, probably around 50% of all cholangiocarcinomas, are the perihilar, the ones around the exit of the bile ducts to the liver. And that's what's found in clinical practice. So the perihilar is the most common. 50% of cholangios roughly are perihilar, and about 20-odd% intrahepatic, 25-odd% extrahepatic. Now, given that there are differences in them, it's important to know which of them is really going up. And so, you know, we know they have slightly different risk factors, etc. ICD, International Classification of Disease, is a system from the World Health Organization that gives every single disease a code, not just cancer, but you know, every disease has a code number. And the idea is that everyone around the world uses to monitor their disease rates or cancer rates, has a code. And so we can monitor internationally what diseases are going up, what's going down, etc., to look for trends. And the ICD coding system changes because we get new diseases, or we realize one disease might be two separate diseases. So it's always evolving. And we're up to the currently most places in the world are using the 10th version of the ICD system. So it's been going on for decades. Now, the problems are that the ICD coding system has a separate code for intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, and it has a code for extrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, but does not have a code for hilar cholangiocarcinoma, which is the commonest cholangiocarcinoma. That has been corrected in the new ICD coding, but that hasn't come out yet. But that has been rectified, but that still hasn't come out yet. So all the historical data showed that the studies we did and other people have done showed that intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma is rising, going up and up and up and up and up and up. And extrahepatic is going down, 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 down. But the perihilar, which is the commonest type of cholangiocarcinoma we see, we don't know where what's happening to that. And the studies that I've done have shown that it is probably, these perihilar cholangia are probably being coded incorrectly as intrahepatic, because there's nowhere else to put them. You either put them intra or distal, but they're a separate sort of, they're a subtype. And so this reported rise in intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma may be, it might be intrahepatic or it might be perihilar. We don't know. And the complications are that not just that the ICD coding has not missed a code for this perihilar, but also different countries adopt new ICDs at different times. So they don't all, it's not that ICD is a new version released, every country immediately starts using it.
It sounds like a bit of a mess. How do you retroactively fix the incorrect diagnosis that's been given so that you do have an accurate picture of what's going up and what's going down?
Well, retrospectively, you can't on an international level. You can do it locally at a small level. So, for example, we did the study which we published last year where at three centres, my centre, University College London and Liverpool, so three regional centres. And we looked at around between the three centres, we looked at 600 cases of cholangiocarcinoma historically over the last few years. And we looked at what was it coded by the hospital, because that's the data that goes to the cancer registry nationally, and that's the data that's published. So a hospital updates the cancer registry and says, we had this many cases of breast cancer, lung cancer, whatever, right? These codes. And that goes into the national database, and then that's how national data is given, right? So the national data is only as good as the local data that's being given to it. We looked at 600 cases at our three centres and what they were coded. Then we looked in detail at the cases. You know, we pulled the notes, we looked at the imaging, we looked at the MDT discussions, we looked at the case notes. We went back to reviewing every single case. And what we found was that 90% of perihilar cholangio, what we would say is definitely a perihilar cholangiocarcinoma, were coded as intrahepatic. So, you know, you can't do that for every case in the world. That's just not feasible. And even if you did, the cancer registry doesn't have a historic code to say, okay, fine, we'll put it into code 771, for example, the correct code, because it just doesn't exist until the new ICD comes out.
And so, when will the new ICD come out internationally?
So I think countries will start using it probably next year. But again, the rate will vary from country to country, depending on the cancer registries.
Okay, we're about to out of time. I did want to conclude with just some kind of a forward-looking statement from you on how you see diagnosis and treatment of cholangiocarcinoma going forward, both in the United States and elsewhere.
Well, I'd like to end on a positive. We have come a long way from where we were. So, for example, we have very little knowledge of the risk factors. 20 years ago, we know much more about the risk factors, so we're more aware. So we know most of the cases, about 60%, still don't have any known risk factors. But the 40% that do have risk factors, we're a lot more tuned in to monitoring these patients. Right? We have now got correct ICD coding. So looking ahead, future, next 5, 10, 15 years, we'll have more accurate coding. Other positive things, transplantation for cholangiocarcinoma was contraindicated everywhere 20 years ago. But the US led the way. The Mayo Clinic, about 10, 15 years ago, started publishing patients they did transplant and found that if you really selected your patients carefully with cholangiocarcinoma, they did very well from a liver transplant. And so they changed the game. Now, liver transplant, not for all cholangiocarcinoma cases, but for certain cases, is now deemed to be an appropriate treatment.
Is that the only treatment that's effective?
No, surgical resection. So surgery, if the diagnosis is made early and the cancer is localized and it's resectable, then that offers a good chance of cure. And surgical techniques are getting better. And then most patients will end up needing systemic treatment or types of chemotherapy. We have really come a long way in that in the last 20 years. We now have, for the first time in the last couple, so we have general chemo combination of gemcitabine and cisplatin, which was the established treatment for a decade. But in the last couple of years, we've now found that patients with specific mutations might respond very well to targeted treatment. So pemigatinib is the first of these. So patients with cholangiocarcinoma who have a particular actionable mutation, an FGFR2 fusion or rearrangement, we know they respond specifically well to this particular drug. And so this has been another game changer. So going ahead, I see a time, hopefully in the very near future, where patients will be, the mutational breakdown in their cancer will be profiled, and there will be several different types of first or second line agents that say, okay, you've got this mutation in your cancer. This is the treatment that is going to give you your best shot, rather than we'll just try something.
For Imperial College in London, Dr. Khan, thank you so much for talking with us. This is Larry Luxner with Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you for listening.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.